It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about civility in politics. You might define civility as politeness or courtesy and respect. Civility also is about seeking common ground. And a poll from Georgetown University earlier this year found an overwhelming number of Americans feel frustrated by incivility in politics. 90% of respondents said they're concerned about the, quote, uncivil and rude behavior of politicians. So what questions do you have about holding civil conversations with people of differing opinions? Is it possible to have expansive national elections and have them stay civil, taking the high road many months? We're at 800-642-1234. Carolyn Lukensmeyer is Executive Director Emerita of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. It's an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility. Carolyn, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, Kate, thanks for having me.
So here we have the fourth Democratic presidential primary debate tonight, the eventual nominee, of course, facing President Trump in the general election. How do you view right now the level of civility between candidates at this stage of the campaign?
Well, actually, Kate, I think the Democratic candidates have, in fact, held a very good commitment to staying civil and very, very few personal attacks or very, very few ad hominem name-calling, etc. So to this point, the Democrats have been pretty respectful of each other.
So you're giving them a pretty good letter grade here, but let's listen to an exchange from a previous debate. And we're going to first hear former Vice President Joe Biden, followed by former Housing Secretary Julian Castro.
They do not have to buy in.
You just said that. You just said that 2 minutes ago. You just said 2 minutes ago that they would have to buy in. You said they would have to buy in.
Have to buy in. If she qualifies for Medicaid,
are you forgetting what you said 2 minutes ago?
Be in for it.
Are you forgetting already what you said just 2 minutes ago?
So, Carolyn, clearly the crowd swept away there, seeming to agree that Castro crossed a line. What did you hear in that interaction?
Well, it is one of the few examples where one candidate has gone after the other in a way that, as you said, the crowd even expressed their distaste for that kind of treatment of people who are running for president. And I think Castro himself clearly understood in terms of it didn't have the effect that he'd hoped it had and has backed off of that. I imagine that we'll see that again this evening.
And Castro defended himself by saying, hey, this is why we're here. We're supposed to be debating ideas for the voters so the electorate has the information they need to make an informed decision. But so break that down for us, because debate and incivility don't go hand in hand.
Well, it's interesting. If you really look at the way debate is taught in high schools, in some elementary schools and colleges, debate is taught to share a very intense analysis of each other's ideas and points of view. Debate was not set up to catch someone out on a personal note. So I think we have distorted what debate is supposed to be when we put it in a political arena, Kate.
Well, we think of debate being a negative thing, but you're saying the roots of debate are really about making specific policy points?
Absolutely, and demonstrating why the position that I'm holding is actually more appropriate for the problem we're trying to solve than the position you're holding.
When I think of, college debates and debates among young people, they seem to be very carefully coached, and they also are following very specific rules. What about the rules of debate? Should we hold those to a higher standard here as we try to understand different viewpoints?
You know, traditionally in American politics, it was the League of Women Voters that sponsored the presidential events. And they actually did have a set of standards, a set of norms, a set of rules about how the debate should be conducted. And as our politics took a turn to being more personal, more attacked, eventually the League stopped supporting the debates. Now they go through the Presidential Commission on Debates, And in each of the last two presidential cycles, 2016 and 2012, issues arose about the debates that have pushed the commission into taking another look at what their rules for the debates are.
So rules becoming more of something we should debate, perhaps, or at least talk about. We're talking with Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She directs the National Institute for Civil Discourse, and she works with Congress. She works with communities across the country to increase civility. You can join in. Do you think the media encourages incivil debates? Have you seen examples where civility is done well in the press? What questions do you have about holding civil conversations with people of differing opinions? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Carolyn, what recent examples can you point to where the principles of debate were used effectively and civilly in our very polarized world that we're living in?
Well, Kate, this may surprise you, but the example that I'm going to point out actually came from our young people. If your listeners will think about the horrific shooting in Parkland, Florida, at the Stoneman Douglas High School. Those students, after the fact, as they toured the country in very, very contentious political areas to talk about the issues of gun registration, of the issue of how difficult it should be for someone who has been a felon or who has a mental illness to get a gun. Those students, all of whom were trained in debate, held those meetings around the country, facing opponents many times much older than they were, always holding their equanimity and always sticking with the content of the argument, never the character of their opponent. I thought it was a stellar example of how debate could forward our politics on some of our most contentious issues.
So they were a prized example in your view of using their viewpoint and doing it well. Where are these students today? How has this debate landed when the students went this road and just put their points out there?
Well, there were more legislation passed. There was more legislation passed at the state level post that shooting and the activism led by those students than we have seen in several decades in the United States. So, in fact, the strategy they chose was very effective. They then have continued their work in which they've taken even more directly political in supporting candidates who hold positions on gun registration or on the size of an ammunition clip. So I think their track record is pretty impressive.
Well, getting back to the presidential, the primary debates we're seeing and candidates criticizing the fact that moderators are using Republican talking points in their questions or trying to pit candidates against each other in some way. Do you find that the news media is adding to this problem here that you're seeing as we talk to each other about issues?
Well, take tonight's debate, the one coming up. There has been quite a press in the national media to suggest that the Democrats, in order to distinguish themselves on issue, had better move into attack mode. So I think there is, because of the tradition of politics in the United States and the role the media has played, I think the media is not doing it to intentionally create incivility, but they're not recognizing that they're holding that position in a changed overall social context and a changed type of politics. So I do think the media is playing a role. You know, many of the candidates have responded back that they are not interested in attacking their opponents. They're interested in clarifying their policy positions through, in fact, intellectual rigor, through the use of data, through the use of anecdotal data from actual Americans' lives in terms of how the policies, rather than turning around and attacking their opponent.
So outside of the campaign, we're seeing outside of the debates, we now have the House's impeachment inquiry against President Trump because of the Ukraine investigation and the investigation that against his political opponent, Joe Biden. As you look at that, are you hopeful there will be civility throughout that inquiry?
Well, I do think that that is what Americans want. The poll data that you read at the top of the hour has been consistently verified time and again that Americans really believe incivility is now a crisis. So I do think the press from the public on the committee chairs running the hearings is to continue to go for the facts, but to do so in a way that represents the civility and respect that really makes a democracy function.
President Trump and his supporters have called this impeachment inquiry a witch hunt and the Democratic Party's attempt to reverse the results of the 2016 election. How does intense partisanship negatively impact as you look at civility?
Well, there is no question, but what there's a direct cause and effect relationship between hyperpartisanship and the increase in incivility and disrespect in our politics. You know, George Washington, in his farewell address to Congress, really warned the country about the negative impact of partisanship. And he wasn't even framing it as hyper-partisanship, Kate. He was describing that when partisanship, when my commitment to my party becomes higher than my commitment to my country, by definition, we're losing the forces for what the American government was formed to do, which was to protect the interests of the common good and national security. So I think there's no question about what hyperpartisanship, the issue of impeachment itself. If you talk to any outside experts, people who understand the Constitution, there is a trail of facts here that demonstrate the president took an action in Ukraine outside of the framework of the Constitution.
And we have to pause right there with Carolyn Lukensmeyer here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, we're talking about civility here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you tired of the bitterness you hear, the entrenched sides of the political aisle? Are you looking for ways to talk about difficult issues in a respectful way? Polls find the majority of Americans perceive incivility to be a problem in our country, and they point to social media as a big culprit. So what do you do in your personal life to promote civility? What does it mean to you? How do you conduct yourself on social media? How do you read, digest, and react? Let's talk about it here at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Carolyn Lukensmeyer is our guide. She's Executive Director Emerita of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. Carolyn, you know, we've been discussing how the media is handling the debates and the civility and whether it's civil. But what about the press more generally? Could they be covering current events in a more civil manner?
Well, one of the interesting things is, again, many surveys done of the public is what they really want from the media is to also tell the stories of what people are doing to combat this incivility and disrespect. One of the wonderful things about working at the Institute is we have a chance to interact both with elected officials all over the country and state legislatures and the public. And when you actually are out around the country in communities, you find as many positive examples about the relationship between the media and the community, and even more important, about what people themselves are doing to combat this incivility. A couple of examples. Not too long ago, we were in Cleveland at a city club, and a young woman came up after the panel. Her name was Megan Anderson. She started with her colleagues, so some college friends, a whole effort on Friday nights in the Cleveland metropolitan area that they call craft beer and conversation. And they go to a different craft bar around the city, bring together people of different points of view, and set up an opportunity for them to get to know each other as people. And she just did this on her own. The Council of Churches is doing work in many, many churches across the country to actually deal with parishioners who were part of a very good solid community before the 2016 election that have stopped talking to each other. We get all kinds of requests at the Institute to help organizations to bring in, you know, Americans want to connect, Kate. It's not where we are, this antipathy and this moral judgment of each other because we're in a different party or voted for a different candidate. That is not typical of Americans or American politics. Historians say it hasn't happened to us since the Civil War and the post period of the Civil War. So Americans are anxious to get reconnected. They just need support to do that across these many divisions.
You had mentioned Cleveland there and the work of a younger generation, millennials there, bringing people together. You've also been in Milwaukee working with some millennials, I understand.
Well, at the Institute, we've understood that what we have to do is go to scale, Kate. How can we fight back against millions of people hearing all this negativity every day? So we've initiated with a partner, New Voice Strategies, a docuseries for television called Divided We Fall. And one of the groups that we've filmed is a group of very diverse millennials from the Chicago-Milwaukee area. So we brought together for a weekend 12 people, six of whom are very, very strong Trump supporters and six of whom are very, very strong Trump resistors. But we set up so they met each other as people first, Kate, so they understood who they are, what their values are, what they do in the world. And by the time the tough issues about politics got introduced, they had been connected enough as people that they were intrigued to listen to one another. And by the end of the weekend, they came out really saying, you know, I'm very surprised, but I really like these people. I'd like to stay in a relationship with them, even though they voted differently than I did. And the stories of how these young people changed their lives after this experience, a young organizer, Cesar from Milwaukee, is now the on-the-ground organizer for the entire Lutheran outreach process for the state of Wisconsin. Another young man named Ernie in Chicago ran for the city council. So this discovery that we can dialogue across our differences really promotes people taking the courage of what they'd like to be doing to make a difference as opposed to what they were doing previously.
We're talking with Carolyn Lukensmeyer, who leads national initiatives to teach people how to debate respectively, how to listen to each other, especially when they disagree. Have you been following the Democratic presidential primary race? Does it seem civil to you? How does it compare to races of years past? Do you think we should build civility into our rules, our legislative rules in our state and in Congress? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Carolyn, your organization is also working on the state legislature level across the country to encourage civility among government, among state government. And there's, I understand, potential to come to Wisconsin with this initiative. What is it doing?
We call the program It's Next Generation. And for 5 years, we've been doing workshops in state legislatures called Building Trust Through Civil Discourse. And we spend time in the legislature, supported by leadership, with the right appropriate percentage of Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Green, whatever the reality in that state is. We bring them together, and very much like what I just described we did with millennials around Milwaukee and Chicago, we create the opportunity for the legislators to get back in touch with what motivated me to become a public servant? What are the values I really want to bring to bear for my constituents? And the same process happens. They get reconnected as people. More bipartisan legislation is passed once they have had these conversations. My favorite example is in the state of Maine. When they convened the legislature this last January, the president of the Senate, Troy Jackson, and the Speaker of the House, Sarah Godin, actually got together and said, we need to do something that builds relationships between the Republicans and Democrats. So they did a simple decision, but quite radical in its effect. They changed the seating chart. So instead of the famous across the aisle, all Republicans on one side, all Democrats on the other side, they just put RD, RD, RD. And they also mix them by suburban, urban, and rural, which is one of the biggest political divides in the country. So what we see happening, Kate, in this, we've worked in 16 states, more than 1,000 legislators, more bipartisan legislation is passed, and more comedy, more civility and respect is introduced again in the state house.
Do state houses reach out to you and say, hey, we need help, or do you come to them? How do those relationships come to be?
Well, in the beginning, we reached out to be in partnership with the two national organizations that the vast majority of state legislators belong to, the National Council of State Legislators and the Council of State Governments. And we went to their annual conferences, Kate, and we presented a short version of the workshop that I just described. So members had an actual taste of it. They saw what would happen if we came to their states. Once we got started, then often there's communication between the leadership from one state to another state. So an early state we worked in, Idaho, which is a very red state, very often was called by majority leaders and presidents of senates in other states that are dominantly red in their representation. And they would ask the president and the speaker, what was the impact of this in Idaho? And that has led us to be invited into many other states that are dominantly red.
And so as we wrap up here, just a few seconds left, you know, we regularly hear how this is an incredibly polarized time. President Trump lives and breathes on Twitter. Where do you see hope for civility at this point?
Well, one thing that your listeners really should know about, because most of the negativity is coming out of Washington, but there are signs of hope even inside the House of Representatives in Washington. Nancy Pelosi started a select committee on the modernization of Congress, and they held a hearing on civility just 2 weeks ago. And in that hearing, Keith Allred, our new executive director, actually proposed 12 action steps that the committee could take that could increase the working relationships between Republicans and Democrats inside the House of Representatives.
And we have to leave it there. Carolyn, thank you for joining us.
Kate, it's my pleasure. I'm delighted to be part of your program.
Carolyn Lukensmeyer is Executive Director Emerita of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.